Blog Talk Radio.
I am Matt, actually on location with a Q&A with Baxter's Grove, and running the show tonight is Dennis. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
Oh, just wonderful, brother. Just wonderful. I'm a little jealous that I'm not at Bachelor's Grove with you, but I guess I'll survive.
Yeah, we're not actually at Baxter's Grove because it shuts down at sunset, but we are at the Ashbury Coffee House, which has its own spooky reports and everything, but upstairs in the Ashbury where there was a woman's body that was found that was hung is where the Q&A is going on. So came downstairs, I'm all jacked up on coffee, and it's definitely a good time.
Definitely sounds like it, brother, but you know, I'll tell you, since Matt's on location, folks, we've only got him for a few seconds. But don't fear, we still have this thing covered. This boat's still going to sail, and joining us tonight, we've got some pretty interesting guests. We're going to be on with All-Seeing Paranormal Society. Howard's going to be joining us. We're probably... good possibility going to have Steve Dills from Transcend Paranormal joining us. You never know what's going to happen. But, hey, Matt, if you get a chance later on, do you think you can buzz back in, spend a couple of minutes with us, tell us some of the cooler questions that were asked in the Q&A there about Bachelor's Grove?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, of course. So far what's been covered, which we've been going over the famous photo that was in Dale Kaczmarek's collection, which was actually, and I can't remember her last name, but her first name was Mary, the one that took the infamous photo of the woman sitting on the headstone, has been a huge topic of what's going on. And Ursula and Carl and I, and have to give a shout out to Mark, who is out here with us.
Oh, cool.
Mark. It's been a little bit of a hiatus for him, but seems to be kind of falling back in line, so to speak. Just kidding.
Yeah, well, if nothing else, brother, if nothing else, you're going to have to resort to just, you know, tie the top up there as a little tube top and, you know, get it on Mark's lap and get pictures taken so everybody remembers who he is.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get a photo op like that, kind of like the one that I did. I don't know. I'll see. He's wearing a button up though, so I don't know if it'll actually come across as well as mine did. But Yeah, no, we're Thatcher's Grove from where I am standing right now is about a minute and a half car drive, if that. So, like I said, also the Ashbury and the complex that I am in has reports of activity. Hence, actually, the place right next to the Ashbury, which is called Dead Serious Tattoos. Well, the reason they named it Dead Serious Tattoos is because of the stuff that happens in their shop.
They
so, actually,
tattoo cadavers?
Oh, no. But, well, it was originally going to be Serious Tattoos as opposed to fake joking tattoos. I don't know. But they added the dead because of stuff that has happened in their parlor.
So they've had a few passings on location.
Yeah, well, not during getting tattoos. So if anybody's in the area, don't think that if you go, you're not going to get the hep, you're not going to get the HIV. No, it's clean. The people who actually run it, it's closed right now, are actually hanging out in Ashbury Coffee House. So, no, I've been in their shop. It's actually a really, really nice shop, and they've talked about the reports and everything that's happened. But dude, we're going to have them on sometime.
Hey, I'm good for it. I'm definitely good for it. But, all right, well, I'll let you get back to it, brother. I'm going to take over, if you don't mind. We'll see about getting this show rolling.
Of course
I
mind.
Well, of course. That means you don't get to talk. But by all means. Now, real quick, give a brief rundown. You've got however much time you want to devote. Give a real quick rundown. Tell us about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
All right. Oh, hell, where do I start? Bachelor's Grove Cemetery is, it's perched next to a river. If you guys have seen the Ghost Adventures episode where they were here recently, I believe it was towards the fall of last year. You get knocks, bangs, footsteps, and which is strange being in the woods. And one of the major, major reports is the spirit orbs. If, in fact, we were doing a live video program also, I would walk upstairs and I would run my camera around so everybody could see all the photos, reports of everybody and everything that have had experiences throughout the whole area. Well, Thatcher's Grove was desecrated, kind of like the cemetery that you've been working at too and trying to resurrect, just as well as Ursula Bielski and Carl Coachman and Lynn Dorman and everybody else who are just putting in a huge effort to try and, pardon the pun, but resurrect it from the dead. There have been Satan worshippers out there. If you research anything about the Fulton family, you'll find that. The Stoughtons, it's an age-old cemetery that has a huge, huge history and just a bunch of stuff that's still going on there, which is part of the Q&A that all of us have been working on getting information for, sharing information, and everything else. It's definitely something to look into.
Yeah, most definitely. I've done a little bit of research. Now, keep in mind, I'm 1,100 miles away from Bachelor's Grove, but yeah, I mean, it's some definitely interesting information around there. So, sounds like it'd be definitely kind of cool to go check out. It's a shame Cook County Parks and Rec won't let you in there overnight and have your Q&A, you know, amongst the headstones.
Yeah, well, it's starting to get cold, so that might not be a bad thing.
Oh, well, that's why they make heavy coats.
put it this way, it's not all right. The other one that's famous around here too is Robinson Woods. Well, Robinson Woods is on an Indian burial ground. There was actually, believe it or not, a Revolutionary War battle that happened on the property of Robinson Woods also. I know, Dennis, you have Civil War. Yeah, up here we have Revolutionary. But, yeah, definitely not like the woods that I was traipsing around in this past weekend.
So you're not thinking that they were running around in lifted and programmed Jeeps splashing through the mud and the muck?
If they were, more power to them. And, hey, I have to give a shameless plug out for Chrysler on this in creating the Jeep product. And holy crap, is that thing nuts.
I think the driver's nuts. The vehicle's not so much. It would have probably preferred to just sit its little happy ass in the parking lot and look pretty, but no. You got to go and turn her into a dirty, dirty girl. Putting her through the mud and muck.
Oh, by the way, dude, and you saw the pictures of it. The one thing I didn't notice until today is I kind of popped in my head. I'm like, all right, I really got to check my air filter. So I popped the hood when Mark and I went out to lunch, and my engine and whole engine compartment is brown, which means mud, which also means
nasty. Yeah. I'm waiting. There's a downside here. I mean, you got mud up the fenders, up the side.
No. I apologize to be distracted and laughing. I just got an air drum solo. Yes, air drum solo, which is phenomenal from Mark. You want to say hi?
Hi. Hi, Mark. How are you?
No, man, it's definitely a good time, and wish you're out here.
Yeah, well, knowing that you're inside, me too. But if you were outside, you know, chilling in Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, yeah, no, not so much. That's kind of why I moved this far south, so I don't have to freeze my balls off.
Well, it's not freezing yet. I mean, damn, come on.
I know, it'll be dark there shortly, and then it will be.
It's dark here right now. What in the hell are you talking about? It gets dark at like 5.
Well, I don't know. I'm not there. How the hell am I supposed to know it's dark there?
Well, it's dark by you, right?
Well, yeah, the sun sets in the east. We get darker before you.
Yeah. The other thing I realize is nobody really cares about that.
Yeah, you didn't realize it. You knew it going into it. You just didn't give a shit and followed my dumbass lead.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no. So, who all has shown up? You have, obviously, you have Ursula Bielski there.
Yes.
You have, obviously, CPR Mark.
Yes.
All right. Well, who else is there with you, brother? Give me a quick rundown.
The major ones who are involved are Carl Coachman, who has been doing some phenomenal research. And online on Facebook, he's Carl K. Just K, the letter, not K-A-Y. And also, I know, Dennis, you know him, Len Dorman, who is a phenomenal historian, phenomenal researcher. He's been sharing a bunch of stories. And let me tell you, this dude, Len, I love him to death. He is such a trooper. Anytime that there's an event that's going on, he will sit there at... Sorry, motorcycle got excited.
Oh, I thought you got radio bombed.
No. Not yet. But no, Len, every time any event that we have out there, he will perch up in his chair. And one of those unfoldable, you know, kind of lawn chair style things. And he will sit there from open to close. And you approach him, you talk to him, and it's all history about Bachelor's Grove, and he is 1,000% accurate. So besides
cool.
that, got just a bunch of different patrons and everything who've been out there who enjoy the Grove, who really want to, you know, help with the restoration project and everything. It's actually really cool.
Well, awesome. All right, well, I will stop disturbing you. I'll let you run back over and go partake of the activities there. Obviously, give everybody my hellos. Give them our love from Richmond, Virginia. And
definitely will do.
And I will carry on with the show, my friend.
All right, you got first caller in yet or what?
I do. I have callers online. Actually, I'm pretty certain. Of course, they don't come in with caller ID, but I'm pretty certain that I have Howard and Steve online with me, so I'm in good shape.
Are they actually on right now?
Well, say hello to them and find out, brother.
Hey, Howard, Steve, you with us?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I do apologize. I'm going to check in a little bit later in the show, but I'm at an event for Bachelor's Grove right now, so couldn't miss kicking off the show and everything, and just wanted to say hi, and I'm going to run back in, and I got my speech I got to give in a couple minutes, so.
Hey, we understand.
All right, good luck.
All right, guys. Dennis, I'll catch up with you a little bit later.
All right, brother. Well, you mentioned Lynn. Actually, one of the callers that's online with me right now is Ryan. He's the historian for All Seeing Paranormal Society, so it should be pretty sweet.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, it won't be too long until I'll be checking back in, because I think we're going to be wrapping stuff up here shortly. So I'll hop in. I know I got questions, so.
All right, well, if you get a chance, we'll be here, brother.
All right, man.
All right, brother, be good.
Talk to you soon.
All right, bud. Bye now.
All right, bud.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Matt calling in to us. Oh, I've lost somebody. Oh, well, never mind. I expected to lose that one. But that was Matt calling in to us from Chicago. He is at a Q&A session with Ursula Bielski, Lynn Dorman, Carl Kay, a whole bunch of them there, all talking about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. And I'll tell you, if you've never done research on this place, man, is it cool. From the quite early, I believe it's quite early 1900s, shot off of a Polaroid, they have a picture of a woman sitting on a headstone that wasn't there. Showed up on the photograph, but nobody there saw her. You could actually see through her. And this is off of the Polaroid film slide. So now joining us, folks, we have Howard from All Seeing Paranormal Society. Or as Steve likes to say, the all-seeing eye.
Yeah.
we also have Ryan, well, this is the historian for All-Seeing Paranormal Society. And again, we have Steve Dills calling in to chat with us from Transcend Paranormal here in Richmond area. Well, actually, all of the above are from the Richmond area. So good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good evening. Doing well. Appreciate you asking us to come out and talk with you tonight.
How you doing tonight?
Doing wonderful. I definitely appreciate you guys calling in. Appreciate you giving an opportunity to share some of your stories and some of your insight and some of your intellect about the paranormal world. So, now, I'm going to pick on Steve real quick for the start of it. You guys went to a location last weekend, not this past, but last weekend, and we didn't really get much of a chance to find out what you found in your review and everything. How did evidence review go for you? Steve? Uh-oh, maybe we have lost Steve.
That's not good.
Uh-oh. Well, for some reason, he was still on mute.
Now I'm on mute. There he is.
He was good.
In mute for some dumbass reason. I don't know why. I didn't get it.
Steve, I said
you didn't find Jack Pitt. You're not saying anything.
I was like, why is nobody hearing me?
And again, this would be one of those moments where I hang my head in shame and go, ah, shit. Another full spectrum unleashed wonderful moment. So, like I was saying, brother, you went and did an investigation the other weekend. How'd evidence come out for you?
Is that, are you referring to Hanover Tavern?
Well, let's see. Yeah, you had Hanover Tavern, and then we get to Bellingham's with Howard. So Hanover Tavern definitely has my interest.
Well, we've actually, I mean, Hanover Tavern is one of those places where we've been, I want to say, maybe 4 to 5 times now. We've been going back there a lot recently. And it's been awesome because it's been a great opportunity. We've been the first team to ever be allowed to go in there to investigate, which I'm not trying to bribe about or anything like that, but I say that solely for one reason, and that is I believe that if there's something at a location, you know, whether you want to call it a ghost or spirit or whatever you call it, I really think that if it hasn't been interacted with, it's really, you've got to go back a couple of times to really build up a relationship, I personally believe. Especially if nobody's ever gone to a location and said, hey, you know, we actually want to hear from you. Are you, you know, what do you have to say? So throughout our investigations, we've actually been building up more and more activity. And our last investigation there, which we'll have all of our EVPs and everything to show when we're there on the 9th for a big public reveal. But in one location alone within probably a 30-minute period, we have 9 EVPs. And I mean that's after throwing out a lot of stuff because I don't like to show folks things that we can't decipher what it is or if we have any sort of doubt that it might be us or it might be something else you know in the area whether it be you know just the building creaking or something like that. So it's been pretty cool. It's a pretty cool location.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, if I can't prove that, you know, I'm really convinced that this was not just a natural occurrence, you know, the building creeps or, you know, a truck ran by it, you know, and shook the place or something like that, then, you know, I definitely agree. It's not something that needs to be presented as evidence. So,
exactly.
Like I said, I like the way you think, man. I think it would be fantastic to definitely to work with you.
No, thank you.
I think we've lost Ryan.
Ryan,
if you're still with
Dennis, he's with us. Oh, I'm right here.
No, I got.
He's here.
On the same line.
Yeah, we're on one line now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just make everybody
up all of a sudden. See, now that's what happens when nobody tells me what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I know.
I don't unmute them, and two, I think they left me.
No, we're here for you.
All right, well, awesome. So, Ryan, have you worked with Steve by chance on Hanover Tavern?
No, sir. Although I drive by Hanover Tavern all the time, send out to my grandma's house. So I don't know where it is. Actually, I've had lunch there one time.
So you had lunch there. Did you have any? Now let me ask you. I realize that not every investigator has quote unquote feelings, or not every person has feelings. Did you have any feelings about anything at the location?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, it was just a business lunch. I didn't feel anything. Just, I had lunch and left.
Okay. So I take it then that you've never done an investigation there at Hanover Tavern?
No. No, sir.
Okay.
You're going to be real old.
You're a hard fucking interview, Ryan. I'll tell you that now. Usually, there's a little more than yes and no involved in an answer. So,
the lunch was a long time ago. So, I mean, I don't remember all the details. I remember the food was okay, I guess. And, I don't know. I wish I had more information for you about the Hanover Tavern.
That's all right. We'll get back to you because I'm sure that you helped do some of the investigation. Well, definitely the history on Bellingham's, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, for sure.
And I'm like, am I pronouncing that one right?
What do you say, Bill Nemus?
What do you say about it?
Oh, sorry. I think he's pronouncing it right.
Oh, yeah, you're pronouncing it right. Bill Nemus.
Oh, Bellingham's.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, stop calling me sir.
Don't do it. A little nervous, that's
damn
all.
Old. Look, don't make me hang up on you. If you're going to insult me, I'll just hang up on you now. I can go in the living room and talk to my wife and get insulted, for shit's sake.
Oh, my goodness.
Now we'll definitely get to it. I want to dwell on some of your investigative steps that you take as far as pulling history and things like that, because that's one of the things that most investigators I think don't concentrate enough on. For a location like let's go back and pick on Steve for a moment. For a location like Hanover Tavern, how much time did you spend investigating the history, the deaths, the activity, things like that, before you ever went in and did an actual investigation there?
We were there a few times. One of the great things about Hanover Tavern was that the foundation there has compiled all of the history, for everybody. So we've actually been there to get kind of like the lowdown, if you will, of the history. We've investigated the stone jail that's across the street, as well as the courthouse. So we do have, records of everybody that was actually hung inside of the building. It was actually surprisingly easy. Solely because the foundation there is just absolutely awesome. They had all of the, all the historical, data done. So we basically just poured over that for a couple of days to get everything straight before we went in there.
Okay. Now, for those that aren't familiar, Hanover Tavern, of course, is in Hanover County, Virginia. Maybe 20 minutes outside the city of Richmond. Give us a little bit of historical background on Hanover itself, what its important role was or what its historic role was?
Well, Hanover Tavern has, I mean, it's a tavern. It was a tavern back in the day. The tavern that you see now is actually the second building. The first tavern was, they're not sure how it was destroyed, if it was destroyed or if it was just taken apart and rebuilt. However, the tavern that is today is the second tavern. The tavern is dated, I want to say around like 1740-something. It has the Barksdale Theater in it, which is one of the first theaters, I believe, in the U.S. Either that or one of the longest running. I cannot recall. Either way, the courthouse is across the street from it, which is actually the courthouse that Patrick Henry practiced law in. So the tavern was actually a place that he would have gone either to stay late nights if he was working late. He'd also, go over there for whatever, food, drink. The old stone jail, which is right next to the tavern, also across the street, was, it was the Hanover County Jail. They did have executions in the jail, both outside and then once the United States stopped public execution, there were a number of hangings inside of the jail. They also sold slaves right outside of the jail. So there's a lot of history in that location. Just that entire, that land altogether just has a lot of stuff that's happened in Hanover County.
The original was built in, you said, 1744?
I want to say it was, like, it's 17-something. Let me see. I want to say it was, like, somewhere around 1740. I can't recall for certain.
Is he on here? Now, okay. You do most of your own historical research and background on locations, or do you have a historical researcher on your team?
We have two historical researchers on our team. So for most of our private cases or cases where we go in and they have no information for us, we'll do our own research. Now, if it's, if we find something, of note, then we do actually present that to the client. Also, if the client has something to present to us, we'll definitely take that and look into it and make sure, it's not kind of like one of those, it was passed down. So we always try to validate everything that we're told.
Yeah. Awesome. Notice. So, all right, now I'm going to be pickling Ryan for a moment. Ryan, you still with me?
Yes. Yes, I am.
All right. What is your favorite aspect of doing the historical research on the location?
Well, I think of every location as having a story behind it, and I like to figure out what that story is. It's kind of like trying to like solve a mystery, putting stuff together and figuring out what happened in the house to make it the way it is.
Well, that was better than a yes or no sir answer. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, I'm working on it. So.
It's his first block, Dennis. We're going to break him in tonight.
Oh, we'll break him in, all right. Kind of like a new prison bitch. By the way, we have been warned. This is Full Spectrum Unleashed. There's no hold barred here. So don't take anything personal.
If you
take it personal, feel free to hang up now because it's not going to end well.
No, it's all good. I got you.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
Now, at some point, I'm going to send an address to you and have you do some historical research for me. And I might even throw it at Ryan, Steve, just out of curiosity to see what the two differences in historical research can do. I'm assuming the two of you have never, like, gone together to do a research on a location?
Mm-hmm. No. No, sir. No, there you go again. Sorry.
You mean anything for you, Dennis?
No, that's all right. He'll pay for it before it's all said and done, Howard. It's all good, brother.
Oh, my God.
You know that schoolhouse we were talking about earlier, Howard?
Oh, yeah.
With the little hearse in front of it. Oh, I saw that picture. That's freaky.
Yeah.
I definitely want to check that out. So.
Have you seen that program that I think is absolute crock of shit called Ghost Bait?
Ghost what?
Ghost Bait.
No, I've never seen that one.
I don't watch it.
Yeah, he's going to be in the burlap bag sitting in a room going, is there anybody here? Hello? And then when he hears the padlock clink shut on the front door, it's going to be an, oh, shit. Sir? Oh, sir? I bet you're still down in the car now.
Yeah, I learned my lesson.
Yeah, just speak freely. Kick back, relax. I've got a great following on this program. Everybody that listens in is really cool. Nobody has any complaints thus far. Well, at least not that have made it through the, you know, pick a number, which is, you know, hung off of a hand grenade pin. But that's beside the point. We don't want to go there. It gets really messy in the complaints department. We'll just say that.
Well, that's good to hear.
So tell us a little bit about... I'm not even going to try to pronounce it again because Howard spelled it for me and apparently screwed that one up.
It's pronounced Bell Nemus.
Yeah. Thanks, Howard. You screwed that one up for me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So Bell Nemus is in Powhatan, Virginia, correct?
That's right.
All right, well, give us a rundown on Bell Nemus. What did you come up with on it?
Well, it was built by a man named James Clark. He bought it from William Mayo, who was actually with William Byrd when he found Richmond. And James Clark bought the land for William Mayo, and... after James Clark died, the house was stuck in litigation for 23 years, and then after that, it was bought by a man named Pleasant Finch, who then sold it, who then died, and his family had it for a couple of decades. And then they sold it to Man Valentine, who actually was responsible for the Valentine Museum.
Okay.
And then after he died, the Valentines had it and sold it, it kind of gets muddled, the ownership of the house, because after the turn of the century, the history gets kind of sketchy.
Okay, so you don't have any dates on any of this?
Well, I have
from the head.
Yeah, you got caught off your pants, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
1765.
I mean, the house was built around 1799.
Yeah.
He bought the land in 1783.
Okay. All right. Well, do me a favor, Ryan. I want you to follow two simple directives for me at this moment. Good with that?
Okay. I got you.
One, take a deep breath. Let it out. And calm the fuck down. You're not making a college presentation, and I'm not grading you on this crap.
talk to him, and
So he's sitting on the back porch of the house, and he sees a figure of a lady walking towards the Uncle Cumbie's house, the slave's house. So he's like, well, you know, I can't believe my fiance's disobeying what I said. We agreed she was not going to go talk to him. So he follows her, and he sees her go through the gate and make her way to the house. But when he gets to the gate, the gate's too rusted for him to pick up. He can't move the latch. It's like stuck. So he can't figure out how she got through it. So he walks back to the house, and he's thinking, well, when she gets back, I'm going to give her the worst tongue lashes she's ever had. She's fucked up big time. So when he gets to the house, he goes to the sitting room.
Carmen Turn back in the day, right? She's fucked up big time?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how they talked back then.
Okay, just making sure, man. We're after historical accuracy here.
Okay.
You do have your seatbelt on, right, Howard?
Yeah, I just dropped a ball on him.
Good God.
Anyway. So he gets back and to the house, and of course his fiance is sitting there in the front in the sitting room area knitting something. Instead of wearing a white dress like he saw outside, she was wearing a crimson dress. So obviously he wasn't following his wife. But, you know, so the next day they go upstairs, and the wife's putting the fiance's putting the pictures back in the attic, and she feels someone pull the back of her shoulder, like around the neck area, pulls her backwards, and she lands on her butt. And she looks at her husband and says, why'd you pull me backwards? He's like, well, I'm 10 feet away from you. I didn't touch you. So that freaked him out. And a couple of weeks later, he was with a friend of his, and they're in an upstairs room. It was raining outside, and the door was locked. I guess they're having some kind of meeting or something. They're talking, and all of a sudden, they looked, and they saw a young lady on her knees with her hands up, like praying, like up in the air, like they were praying, like she's praying. And she fell to the ground, and she's sobbing uncontrollably, and then just disappeared. And that's pretty much the whole story. Although once Uncle Cumbie's cabin burned down, there was a fire. Uncle Cumbie's cabin burned down, and they found that he had been killed. And they found bones and underneath the cabin. And there was a tortoiseshell comb among the bones that they found. So that's the story. I mean, it's all from memory. If I left some stuff out, I'm sorry. It's just I don't have it completely memorized, but that's...
So there was a what among the bones?
A tortoiseshell comb. Because in the picture of Daphne, that was the girl's name. She had a tortoise shell comb, like almost like a barret or something, like something you put in your hair.
Right. Well, that's pretty cool, man. So we do have at least one potential homicide on the property.
Yes. Yes. Possibly so. Yeah, people think Uncle Cumbie might have been killed too, but that's like you said. That's just the story. Yeah, as far as all the names and dates I've been able to find doing my research, I have not found anything about the Jim Scott or Daphne or anybody living in that house. So I'm not going to say. Right now, for me, it's just a story and not
you know,
historical fact.
It's yeah,
when I find more information.
Yeah,
it was a good story.
Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, we have
yeah,
plenty of stuff
definitely.
Without it. So.
Now, during y'all's investigations, Howard, have you gotten anything to lead you to Daphne or Uncle Kirby or anything that can validate the legend?
No, Dennis, to be honest with you, at this point, we have no evidence leading to any of the prior three names. Right now, the evidence we have are towards servants that were at the bottom of the mansion, activity of children in the home, a lady, and possibly someone who might have caretaked for the home while Mr. Clark was away. He's made himself very pronounced at times. We actually got an EVP of one of the, we think at the present time, a master servant, but our evidence from this past weekend is still being gone through. We still have a lot of evidence from the prior investigation that we have some EVPs that we could probably bring up for you.
You think you can bring them up and put them here on air?
Yeah, I think I can do that for you.
Oh, well, that would be definitely awesome.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hand you back over to Ryan. I'm going to try to sort these things out while we get it straight, and when I'm ready, I'll let him know.
All right. Well, this right. next question, then, I'm going to throw both at Ryan and Steve. Ryan, since you dropped the F-bomb, I'm going to mute you for a moment. This is
okay.
Let's sit in the corner. I'm just kidding, man. Don't stress it. It's an F-bomb for fuck's sake. This is Unleashed. So,
hey, that's what I thought. That's why I said it. I'll keep it clean.
Now, wait. I just explained to you that I don't care that it's full spectrum Unleashed, and now you're going to keep it clean. You know what? Just hang up. No, never mind. I'll hang up on you. No, I'm just kidding, brother. But I want to throw this one at Steve first. I want to get his opinion first. What do you think is the most important tool for validatable historic research on a location? And if you answer Wikipedia, this conversation is over.
You just destroyed it.
Just took it
So you're saying, like, the most important tool in terms of, like, not an investigation equipment, but more so of validating finds.
Yeah, just to get actual, good, credible history on a location, not, you know, hearsay, not, you know, rumor. You know, what do you think is the most critical thing that you utilize to get actual historical information about a property?
Well, most of when we do historical research, and you know, I don't necessarily know everything that our historians go through to get, you know, what they pull together for us every month. However, a lot of them, you know, well, both of ours, they have gone to the courts to get information. They've gotten county records, you know, records of the house, especially transactions. You know, when it was built, when was the property purchased, and, you know, when it was sold, who sold it, you know, that sort of thing. So that's definitely a building block of what we use when we're going, you know, through locations. Other times, you know, there are written accounts of, you know, so-and-so being at a location, which are definitely useful. I know with Graffiti House, one of the best parts about it is, you know, everybody that's been there, you know, most of the soldiers that were there didn't write their names on the wall. So, you know, that's a pretty good starting point. you know, most of the stuff that, you know, is just, you know, using records that can be, you know, verifiable, mostly through, like, government acquirement.
So, like, courthouse, police records, things like that.
Mm-hmm. That's
cool.
And that's what we use to build off of, especially for getting, you know, names, at least like a, you know, like I said, like a base. And then, you know, we'll take it from there. Obviously, you know, a lot of the stories that you hear, I always like to take it with a grain of salt because, you know, people do at times, especially with paranormal, from what I find, they kind of blow it out of proportion a little bit. And, you know, what could have been a knock turns into a slam.
Right.
So, you know, we always try to take what we get with a grain of salt and try to validate everything.
Yeah. Not to mention, you know, it goes from, well, you know, when my great-grandmother visited there, you know, there was a plate fell off the shelf and all of a sudden it flew across the room, smacked three people before it broke. Yeah. So, yeah, that's definitely a good way to, you know, go about it. I mean, you know, it's wonderful to have, you know, historical stories about a location, but if you're actually going in trying to find out what the hell is going on in one, then by all means, folks, make sure that you're not playing on hearsay, and obviously that's not to YouTube, but, you know, the listeners, all three of them, four of them. All right, now, Ryan, what do you think is your best tool for gathering verifiable information on a location?
Well, the tool I used most for this past investigation was the internet. Going to different like county sites and trying to get people's names and different dates, the National Historical Landmark Registry, figure out when the house was built. I went to the library and I was able to procure a deed that sold the house from Pleasant Finch to Man Valentine. It was neat to get, but it didn't really help my investigation much. So most of my information I was able to obtain online, actually, which was, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, granted, this one is a private location, but it's also, you know, a national historic location, so there's undoubtedly going to be more there about it. What about just, John Doe's house down the street? What would you rely on most to find out about, you know, have there been any deaths on the property or, you know, things like that?
Well, I'd probably go to the county courthouse or depending when the deaths occurred, I could, you know, go to the state library and pick out the deeds. But the state library, it doesn't, once it gets past the 1900s, they don't keep the records there anymore. You have to go to the actual county where it took place. So it depends on when the deaths or whatever occurred. Depends on that would make me think, you know, where I'd actually go to get the information.
All right.
The library, the courthouses and stuff, I'd go check out or talk to the people who live there and see what they know.
All right, now, I mean, do you go to, like, neighbors and try to find, you know, Mrs. Jones lives down the street, you know, she's been there for, you know, 75 years, or do you even bother with the neighbors?
Well, I haven't really had an investigation where I would have to talk to neighbors yet, so I don't want to, if I, you know, obviously I would if I had to, if it came up, but the investigations I've been on so far, I've not had to do that. And I don't want to, you know, say I had when I hadn't.
Right. Now, Steve, do you turn to the neighbors or things like that to ask what they're aware of, or does that usually just turn into hearsay so much?
We have spoke to neighbors on a few of our investigations, you know, where it was befitting to do so. I mean, most of the times whenever you're talking to other folks, and I'm not saying that there's, you know, it could be right or wrong, because in my point of view, when I hear of something paranormal, the biggest thing to me is if I wasn't there, I can't validate it. You know, no matter how, you know, busy or lack thereof it was, quite the fact, I always take everything with a grain of salt. So if somebody tells me that, you know, they had something happen, that's great, and I try to validate it, but, you know. But, yeah, we have spoken to tourists as well as past owners of locations to gather, you know, what they've had experience at the location. If nothing else, it's a good way to start your investigation, because you know that, you know, well, this person was doing this, so maybe we can try that and you know, on our investigation and see if that yields anything.
Well, let me ask you this. If you have, let's say you talk to, you know, Mrs. Jones, and she said, well, you know, I knew the Smith family when they lived there, and, man, their son was weird. There were always cats showing up dead, and he was always dressed in black. I think he was doing, like, rituals. Would you still go in and do an investigation on the property?
It really depends. When we go to do our investigations, we always lead off with a preliminary investigation, and that is after somebody speaks to the client all over the phone. When we go out to do a preliminary, it's basically we meet with the client at the location, if it's available. You know, we'll go through a pretty extensive questioning list that we have. So we'll do our interview, and we'll also do base readings of the house. We'll also do a few quick EVP sessions and see what comes out of it. During the preliminary investigation, however, we limit our team to only 2 to 3 people going to the location. Because, you know, the way I see it, if there's something negative there, I don't want to expose the entire team to that. And so I feel like the smaller the crew that can go in, the better, so long as they're not alone. So we never let one person go on an interview by themselves.
Okay. Sounds good. He's a pain. He's a fucking nice guy,
All right, well, somebody's got us on speakerphone and was having WWE in the living room, or what?
I wasn't sure if that was a question.
Everything stopped, right?
Good grief.
Well, I'm glad to know the speaker works well.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, well, both of you are team leaders, correct?
Steve.
Boss, Steve, boss, get under there. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, well, you know. Well, I mean, Steve runs his team slightly different. That's the one thing I like about all the teams in the area. Everybody does it differently, and I think that's why we all can combine and work really well together.
Yeah, I do agree. And, J.H., I see you in the queue. I'll get to you in just a moment, brother. Part of the reason that I asked, Steve, what is your opinion of sending in an investigator by themselves during an investigation to say, hey, J.H., go check out the basement, or, you know, go check out the attic? What do you think of just a single individual in an area by themselves isolated?
I think if it's under a controlled environment, that's fine. A lot of times, if it's the very first place, you know, the very first time that we're investigating, we haven't been there, I'm not going to allow a team member to go by themselves into a location. Just because if they get hurt or if anything happens to them and they can't keep radio in contact, then we don't know where they are. We don't know what happened to them. If they're hurt and they can't communicate and, you know, we're breaking up for a 45-minute, you know, EVP session, that's 45 minutes that person's already been, you know, theoretically knocked out. And, you know, it's just there's too many unknowns. Now, if it's a location that we've investigated and we've, you know, we're comfortable with, then, you know, it's definitely happened where we allow, you know, investigators to go into a, you know, an isolation environment. However, everybody, you know, everybody on the team, there's going to be, you know, at least one or two people that are, you know, outside of that environment, you know, just kind of keeping watch, making sure that nothing, you know, nothing's happening and that, you know, they are safe. So like I said, I mean, we do isolation experiments and investigations, but if it's a first time thing, can't go alone.
Your establishment time.
Cool. Now, Howard, what's your opinion on sending somebody in solo? Say you wanted to send Mr. Shy and Quiet Ryan in by himself.
He might do that now.
Let's be honest with you. None of my team goes in alone at all. There's always a two-member team. A, there's several reasons. A, safety, all and all and above. B, there's two people to confirm if something happens. There's not one person saying, hey, I saw this. What did the other person say? You don't know. That person wasn't there. So two eyes, two sets of eyes at all times. It's also a support system. You know, if one's not feeling, you know, up to par or if they're feeling sick, again, it's like Steve was saying, instead of having that one person out there, if there's two people there, if something's going on, you're able to grab that member or help that member back to the communication site, get them taken care of, maybe take a few minutes to themselves while we still have another team out and rolling around the area.
Well, that's awesome. I do have to agree. And that's, you know, both of you, you know, I mean, I do have some locations where I will send in a solo, but I also know that they're, you know, a safe location. I would never want to put the safety of one of my investigators at risk.
Definitely.
Now, I do have a benefit in the fact that, you know, out of a five-person team, three members of my team are law enforcement. I pretty much trust them to be by themselves. So, you know, I have that benefit. I can send them in, and you know, there's very, very little question on, hey, I saw or heard this. You know, for some reason, law enforcement tends to have a huge amount of respect that comes with the fact that what they do for a living. I have a question in the chat room from Ross, and you know what, just out of entertainment value, let's pick on Ryan again. Ryan, I don't want you to get stressed, buddy. This is a Canadian that's calling, so he's an international caller or international in the chat room. He's asking how much occult stuff goes on in the woods of Virginia. Well, we don't know about Kentucky because we're all in Virginia. So how much occult stuff goes on in the woods here?
How much occult stuff goes on in the woods of Virginia?
Yeah,
I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure there's some. I mean, I haven't done any research. That's another member of our group named Nick Casey. He's into all that stuff. I wish I could be more help, but I don't know.
Yeah. You know, the only reason I threw you on that question was just throw you on the hot seat, right? I'm either going to get you past this yes or no sort of thing, and you'll actually jump right in and answer questions, or I'll keep chucking your ass under the bus until you're tired of seeing the axles.
He needs another shot.
You're right.
But I'm going to do this.
Can you that's fine.
Go ahead, Ryan. Oh, no, see, there's a point where I'm talking, that's when you shut the fuck up. There's a point where I ask you a question, that's when you talk.
Okay.
Howard, I hope you're wearing a seatbelt, because if you fall off a chair laughing, I ain't responsible for your injuries, brother.
Yeah, we're good.
All right. And Hey, Ryan, don't take anything I say on here personal, brother. It's all in fun and games and just keeping the listeners entertained. But I understand that Howard now has DVP ready for us.
Hey, Dennis, I can probably answer that for you better than Ryan. Yeah, I hear you. I would say there is about 40%, you know, activity in the forest around Virginia. I mean, you got to look at the bigger groups. You got Druids, you got Wiccans. You know, you got to consider, I hate to say it, but it is Virginia. You got to consider the Ku Klux Klan in there somewhere. So in Virginia alone, there is a lot of activity in the state when it comes to those kind of things, I think.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, given the fact that, you know, we have, you know, these wonderful programs like, you know, Moonshiners and they're back in the sticks and et cetera.
Yep.
It would not surprise me, given the history of Virginia and how far back it dates, would not surprise me that we don't have all kinds of stuff, given the, you know, the slave ownings and, you know, just the hand-me-down traditions that have come with that. You know, even though, you know, hoodoo and voodoo and things like that aren't, you know, notoriously part of Virginia history, it wouldn't amaze me that it didn't get handed down through the slave generations and, you know, just, I mean, we've got such a diverse culture in Virginia as far as, you know, all the different countries and so forth that, that our residents have come from. So
oh, yeah. Well, let's look at the Guineas.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a couple of different types of some sort of black magic or another that we don't even know of yet.
Yeah.
To answer your question, Ross, we don't know how much occult stuff goes on here. We just know that there's probably a good bit of it, given the history of the state and how old this area is. All right, so what do you have for EVPs for us? Give us a lead in on it and...
Yeah, let's bring them up for y'all. What we're going to do is we've got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's about 7 EVPs. The first one I'm going to play for you was our first session down in the bottom of Bell Nemus. Bell Nemus has a servant kitchen. To the right of it is a servant quarters, and to the left of it is another smaller kitchen, what could have been the servant, you know, kitchen itself. But what I'm going to play for you now is going to be a straight-out EVP, no questions were being asked. It was like a dead time for the investigators down there. They were just listening. And let me play this for you and see what you think.
All right. If I hear a voice say, make me a sandwich, bitch, I know it's not real.
I wasn't down there at the time. all right, here we go. Now, that's probably the clearest EVP we've ever had.
Right, now the...
Were you able to hear that?
Well, I was able to hear it. I was able to tell that there was something there, but given the static and it breaks up on the phone, makes it very difficult to make it out. So what did you make out of it? And then play it again for us like twice.
Got you. What we're actually getting is a servant actually giving his name. It is stating, I'm Washington.
Okay.
So
and play it
let me play
two more times.
You got it. Here it comes. I'm Washington.
I'm Washington. Wow, that is pretty good when you actually, now granted you have a little bit of, you know, little lead in there to, you know, kind of foster the thought of what you hear, but that's pretty cool.
Right. You know, that's why I didn't really want to say anything at first, and I that's what I train my group on, being careful how they talk to each other. Don't say anything what you think it is. You got to confirm it you know, we write it down on paper, then we all confirm what we think we're hearing first until we get our confirmation, is it good or bad? So I'm with you. Number four. This other one, here's one of those theory bangers that comes at you. This is one of the things I talked about at Paracon at the Exchange, is do spirits or entities, if you will, have the ability to have telekinesis or be able to read our minds? And on this particular EVP, you'll hear the EVP, hopefully you'll be able to hear it, and then you'll hear my my lead investigator's response. And here we go.
Sorry, guys.
That's still working,
yeah. There we go.
Okay, I'm not sure if y'all can really pick that up, because it is a low town. But we've come to the conclusion on that particular EVP is the answer of four is being given in a low tone prior to Tommy actually asking the question.
Now, it makes it very difficult because it gets, you know, there's so much noise that comes through over the phone. So I'm not, I'm not so sure that I am thrilled. Now, I've got, you know, even sometimes when I throw them up onto the board here and I'm able to play them through the radio station on the control board, they sound like crap too. And I'm even though I've recorded them and I've, you know, I'm the one that captured them and then play them on the radio, I go, what the hell did I hit? That's what I hit. So, but yeah, I mean, I can hear something there, but not a whole lot.
Well, let's try one more. I want to see, but this one was pretty clear. The other thing we do with EVPs on our first session is, Steve, I don't know how y'all do it, but we use the speech and language to confirm the kind of dating period of maybe the response from the EVP. And we were able to date this EVP back to early 1900s because the pronunciation of what is said, and I can tell y'all after I play it what's being said on this side. It is another lower tone, but I'm going to give this one more shot for you guys so y'all can see what we're picking up. All right. We're going to go with that. And 3, 2, 1. Okay, hopefully y'all were able to hear that.
Not so much.
Yeah, see, that's what I was worried about. I was actually talking to Ryan before he got on the phone going, we really need to get that mixer board on track, man. We're in the middle of getting a mixing board and an amplifier and all that kind of stuff together for if we ever do shows like this. You just have to hit us a little earlier. I love it. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah, it does make it difficult when you're on that side trying to listen to what other people already know.
Yeah, I mean, well, the other thing that you have to remember, it's almost impossible. I'm assuming you're just playing it over the, laptop speakers or something like that.
Yeah, straight off the surround sound. That's right.
Yeah, so it picks up its own natural reverberation. It does make it difficult to be able to pull them out. I mean, like I said, even when I transfer them to the board here on the program, it, you know. Now, I did play that Spirit Box session for you last week, right?
I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think you did.
The real spooky one?
Yeah, that says, I'll skin you alive.
Yeah,
yeah. I love that EP. That was beautiful.
Now, for those that don't know, Jody Parks is a dear friend of ours. And let me see if I can find this. But, yeah, Jody Parks is a dear friend of ours. She's part of Paranormal Hot Squad. She was on Paranormal Challenge. Let's see where in the hell this one's at. But they were doing a spirit box session at Farrar School. And this is actually the spirit box session that they pulled. Now, it's kind of a long one, but I want you to make note of two things. One, how rapid it's scanning. They had it set on its fastest scan rate. And two, the dead silence that comes in when the spirit box actually comments. Now, Farrar School is out in the middle of like BFI. That's bumfuck Iowa. So, it doesn't really get anything as far as radio stations. So to have interference from a radio station at Farrar School is almost extremely impossible. You would have to have a much longer antenna than a typical radio has. So I'm going to play this one for you and listen to the silence and listen to how clear this is. And I've never heard one like this. It just dumbfounds me.
Do the other men here bother you?
Good God, yep. That's freaky.
I'm almost guaranteeing you, if I get a spirit box response like that, there better be a ambulance sitting outside. Because let's take a hypothetical that I've got. Let's take a hypothetical that it's, you know, Howard, it's me, you, Steve, and Ryan in a location, and I've got John from Steve's team that's going to join us shortly. If we're all in a room and I get a spirit box response like that, I'm running every last one of you fuckers over on my way out the door. The ambulance ain't for me, it's for y'all.
The sad part about that, Dennis, I'm going to be the stupid ass that stays to try to find it. Ryan can tell you.
I'll be right there with you.
Yeah, I don't know if it wants to skin me alive. I'm thinking, you know what, guys? While you're watching this shit, you're searching for him, I'll be out at Command Central seeing what the hell happens to you.
Be a good interview.
But, yeah, I mean, that is definitely one of the coolest spirit box sessions I've ever heard. But I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to reach over here. I'm going to grab John, who is a, I guess, prospect team member for Transcend Paranormal. We'll see exactly what gets him into this and why he's willing to go into locations where spirits want to skin you alive. John, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just wonderful, brother. How are you?
Better than average.
Yeah, that's good, because average pretty much sucks. So, I understand you're an investigator in training with Transcend Paranormal.
That's what Steve calls me, yes.
Now, until you earn your wings, I guess, that's what you become. So,
I've been doing it for a while, about a year, on my own, with my wife and I. And we were really interested in getting onto a team, and Transcend was on our radar, so to speak. So we presented some of the evidence and went on a couple of the investigations. I know that Steve was talking about Hanover Tavern. We went there in a public event, gave Steve's team some evidence that we captured. Apparently he was impressed with it. and asked us to consider coming on with Transcend.
Oh, cool. So what got you and your wife into the paranormal?
Probably similar to what a lot of people would say. We had long been interested in it. I actually had a family member that attached himself to me after committing suicide back when I was about 21. And he followed us around probably a good couple of years before letting go. And as it became more popular and in the public spotlight with television, radio shows, things of that nature, we wanted to get more involved with it ourselves. And the amounts of money that they were asking to go on these investigations, you know, was ludicrous. I mean, you know, $200 and you can go with, you know, 100 other people. And I just like, you know what, let's just take that $200 and buy our own gear and start doing it ourselves.
Yeah, I do agree. Now, when you say that you had a family member attach himself, how do you know that he attached himself and how do you know that he followed you around for a couple of years?
Well, and it's kind of different for everybody, but he was actually associating or attaching himself. I would say attaching would be like a permanent thing, but he would visit immediate family members from time to time. And it was kind of an odd situation because when he killed himself, I had the ability to go into the location where it occurred after the police. And everybody talks about the smell of death or death has a smell. And there was just a severe, bittersweet smell, odor in the room. It was kind of heavy like a lilac, but it was pungent. I had never smelled that smell before in that apartment before this occurred and couldn't really associate what it was. But for like 2 years later, no matter where I was, I would be walking down the hall of my home or in my car or at work, and I would just catch a small whiff of that exact smell. And we would always joke around. Well, the family got together one time. We were talking about that and come to find out that I wasn't the only one that was experiencing that and smelling that smell. And, you know, there were a few things that happened, things moving around the house. We had issues with Christmas trees knocking over at Christmas time, pennies being thrown at us for, you know, and all this occurred up to or after that event.
All right, now, Christmas tree knocking over. Cats in the house?
No.
Okay.
No,
well,
this is a big tree, and we had actually secure tied it with twine to keep it from falling. And we came home and the twine was untied and the tree was down. And we had an issue with things moving in the home that there was absolutely no reason we could explain of it. Little items ending up from the top of our dresser, hanging in the closet, you know, on the bedroom that I wouldn't have moved and my wife wouldn't have done either. So.
Okay. All right, now, let me ask you, Howard, what is your opinion on smells? They say that, you know, Auntie Pearl came around and all of a sudden we would start smelling lilacs or whatever. How do you think that shit actually works? I mean, I can understand the noise, but the smell is the part that confuses me.
Well, to be honest with you, that's where you go into two different areas. That's where it splits. Your science kicks in, and then the spiritual kicks in. There's a lot of people who believe that smells come along with areas like if it has demons or if it has negative energy, you're going to smell a certain smell. If it's a positive or a lingering attachment to a location, it's going to have like a lilac. This is the one thing I say to everybody. I was not there when you smelt it, so I cannot say yes or no. But I can say this. I've been taught really well by Chris Bellisone, and I've learned a lot from him. And he did, in his lectures, he talks about smells and some visual sights.
And sometimes what we're smelling is not what's there. Sometimes what they call a mini seizure. Your synapses are firing at a specific way, and something comes back to you, and you're like, oh, I remember that smell. What's that smell? Or hey, I smell something. Well, you know, that's possible, but it might not be true. It may be true. It goes back to, you know, us as humans, we retrofit back to childhood. I know I do. Sometimes I have this absolute craving for yogurt, a particular type of yogurt, and I can actually taste it in my mouth. Well, they bring it out as that's what they call a mini seizure. Your brain's firing in a certain way, and your synapses are misfiring, which brings you to the point of, hey, I think I'm smelling something. When you're really not, it's just your brain telling you you're smelling something. Now, I'm not saying that's all the time, but, you know, there are occasions where that is very possible. The other occasions, yeah, you're smelling ivy in a place that may have, you know, that in that location, or smelling roses, or there's known of lilac, that's possible. But think about it again, what's been led to you before that investigation? If you have a walkthrough and somebody in general conversation talks to you and says, hey, you know, and she wore a lot like perfume and this and such took place, that's going to be stuck in your head. That's a leader. That's in your subconscious. And you're doing your walkthrough or during your investigation on your second, and you go, hey, I smell lilac. Do you really? That's just something to think about.
Okay. Good point. What about you, Steve? What do you think occurs when, just out of nowhere, you get a phantom sense?
I want to say I agree for the most part. I do believe, you know, people are easily influenced. And I actually have done a bit of parapsychology experimenting as well as research. Idea of parapsychology where, you know, a lot of what people experience are just merely, you know, what they're making up. So I do think that, you know, you can be easily influenced to saying, you know, oh, well, you know, so-and-so used to smoke cigars in the house all the time. And then, you know, oh, my gosh, I smell a cigar. There's other times where I think that it's also not as easily explainable. I do know that, you know, scent is one of the easiest things, I guess, to remember. And it does trigger a lot of memories. So I think it's not... I think it would be a good way if something or someone is trying to get your attention and they're trying to reference something specific to make themselves known. I wouldn't put it outside of the realm of, you know, a plausible way to make somebody known that, you know, you're present. I have smelled stuff. I know one of the locations that I was at was Old South District Hospital in Tennessee, and I mean, I was walking with a group of people, and all of us smelled this really, really nasty, like rotten smell. And it only lasted for, you know, 15, 20 seconds, and then it was, you know, it was gone. And we had been in that room for a portion of time, and then it came and went, and I mean, nobody spoke up and said that they dropped one. So
I was going to ask, now is it possible that someone, you know, shot out there an air biscuit?
It's quite possible, but nobody fessed up to it.
Well, let's see. You're in the middle of an investigation. You have 6-8 people sitting around, and yeah, I'm not thinking that, you know, I'm going to fess up for the phantom odor either.
Well, I don't know. On our team, we have to call out everything, no matter how embarrassing it could or is. But it's quite possible. It's definitely possible. Now, that wasn't with my team. That was a totally different event that I was at. So, I mean, you know, you really don't know. I mean, it was pretty interesting, but it could have very easily been, somebody shooting the breeze there.
Yeah, well, I'm going to change gears real quick. I've got Matt calling back in from the Q&A out in Illinois. Sorry, Matt, I had gone to make another cup of coffee, brother. Welcome back.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
What's up?
Hey. Yeah, not much. Just doing a little driving home. Was at the fun gathering for Bachelor's Grove out here in Illinois. So, but no, just want to call in and listen to how the show is going. Sound like an interesting conversation about phantoms and specters and all that. And I wish I was up to speed so I could actually ask everybody some questions. But continue.
All right. Yeah, we're just talking about ghost parts and, you know, things like that during investigations. And, you know. Now, I will say this, and this is no bullshit, and it's funny as hell. We did an investigation. It was about a two-hour drive, definitely out in the country. I mean, the road that we were on, I know we drove off of the, like, main road for 2 miles or so, but, I mean, it's a two-hour drive. On the way out, it's, you know, I'm running short-staffed on that night. It's a small location. I didn't want many people there, so I only took myself and two other investigators. We stopped at a place called the Weenie Shack, or the Wiener Hut, something like that. A little hot dog shack. Hey, Howard, are you still playing EVPs in the background?
No, that's not me.
That's probably me, since I'm driving right now.
Oh, all right. Well, I know how to fix that. I'll mute you.
I'm used to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no doubt. But anyway, we stopped at the Wiener Shack because we're leaving town at like 6:30.
Wiener Shack.
Something like that. Just this little hot dog shop. You know, it's the last thing on the way out of town. I did learn an extremely, extremely valuable lesson that night. The team is no longer allowed to have chili cheese hot dogs with extra onions on the way to an investigation. That was just wrong. Now, it wouldn't have been so bad, but we're in a soft top Jeep. I'm in the back seat on the way out there. You can't really put the windows down in the back, so all I hear is this. I'm like, oh, you sick bastards, put your windows down. No. I pulled out my razor knife, and I'm like, I will open a window. Both windows dropped almost immediately. But, yeah, Philly cheese hot dogs are not allowed. Mexican is not allowed the day of an investigation or the night before. Now, one thing that I did implement, too, by the way, and I don't know, you know, maybe Steve or Howard will want to put some input in on this one as well. What is your opinion of, like, one of the things that I implemented was fleece is, if you're going to have to wear a jacket, the only type jacket you can wear is a fleece jacket.
That's a good idea. Yeah, the problem with the fleece, it can cause static electricity.
That's true.
Yeah. So,
I don't know about the fleece, Dennis, because fleece has the ability to gather up static electricity. And
that's
if you walk down, what's that?
That is a potential. That's one I hadn't thought of, but. You know, and what prompted it was I had someone wearing one of those dumbass, like, nylon jackets.
Oh, yeah.
So every time they walked, you would hear, like, Jason noise.
Yeah.
That does make a lot of noise.
So,
yeah, I think you have to go
call. There's got to be a way to beat that. But looks like we've lost Ryan.
Oh, he's here with me. I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Oh, Matt dropped off, and it's showing me Ryan dropped too, but that was earlier.
But yeah, Ryan's downtown.
So what is like what is one of the strangest, like I consider that one of the strangest rules that I have for my team. What is one of the strangest rules that you have for your team, Steve?
Oh man. I don't know.
I know what it is.
John, have I given you a weird rule?
I don't know. Is the scare rotted to death rule, is that actually a rule or it just seems like something happens?
We do scare Rhonda to death every time. that's not really a rule, though. That's just kind of a, it happens.
Poor Rhonda.
I'm called Spider-Man.
No, I don't think you never really haven't expressed any real rules outside of the normal, you know, announcing your stomach and your in the throat burps and things of that nature and
spectral
part. Yeah, and of course I'll be the first to admit that if that was me, I'm going to fess up to it. I'll tell everybody. So
like lock the door.
Yeah. How about you, Howard? Have you got any similar rules that just are kind of out of the ordinary just for evidence protection, I guess?
It's not really out. It's more common sense. I'll bring baby bath wipes or baby wipes with me, trying to tell you. And the girls might come in, they might have just a hint of perfume or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They won't go in. They're wiping down. There's no cologne, no perfume. And, I've gotten a couple of my girls with it a couple of times. And they're like, what? No, you're not going in.
Yeah, mine's the same thing. It's, a very low odor, if any odor, deodorant. No cologne, no perfumes.
Yeah, we have the same on that. No cologne, no perfume. We have no baggy clothing. Yeah.
Yeah, and part of the reason for the baggy clothing, I'm sure, is so you're not knocking shit over like a bull in a china shop. You're potentially bumbling around in an unknown house with, minimal light. Now, Howard, I'm going to go ahead and share some of the conversation that we had earlier regarding waivers and things of that nature, if you don't mind.
Oh, I think it's a great idea because I actually learned something from you, so let's do this.
All right. Well, one of the things that Howard had told me was that he has waivers that he will sign and have his team sign for an investigation to give the homeowner / location owner peace of mind. Well, here's a secret. A waiver of liability is not valid in the state of Virginia unless it contains two witness signatures that are signed in front of a notary public and they're notarized. The simple fact that you walk in and go, well, I have this waiver where my team swears that they won't sue you if, little Johnny's clumsy ass topples. Sorry, John, I forgot there was a John in the conversation. But if so-and-so's clumsy ass topples down the steps and breaks a leg, that waiver really doesn't protect the homeowner. One good way to do it so the homeowner is protected and you are protected. Let's say, God forbid, one of your investigators take a misstep, stub their toe on a little end table or something and knock over a great-great-great-great-granny's priceless Ming vase. Somebody's on the hook for that money. So one of the best things that I've discovered is you form an LLC in the team name and you carry general liability for the team. Now, the general liability insurance might cost you, say, $200-$300 a year tops. Like mine, I have a $2 million policy, but I also utilize it
as my, like, I'm a contractor by trade. So I utilize that general liability for this also. You know, just a good way to cover everybody's ass. I just think it's a great way to go and protect your ass. And if you're having experiences in your home, you know, there's certainly a fantastic way to set the homeowner's mind at ease. Let's see. Hey, Steve, can you answer the question in chat for me, brother, since you're the one that's most familiar with Enricus?
Yeah, let me pull that up in one second here.
And I'll
I'll
throw this out. Ask those guys if Enricus has any paranormal activity or is it just strictly historical?
Enricus has, I mean, there's a lot of paranormal activity that goes on at Enricus. We have everything from a what I call a full body, like a black shadow type of thing. We've had our DVR cameras moved, and we've gotten tons of EVPs out of Enricus. It's like I was saying earlier, it's one of those places that the more that we investigate there, the more we find that it builds up. It's our training grounds for Transcend. So we're there every couple of months investigating. We use it for training, for, you know, onboarding, for, you know, new folks. So we do end up staying the night on site a lot of times. And I mean, there's been nights where we have to turn on like radios or put in headphones because, you know, you'll just hear people walking downstairs. You hear, you know, talking, conversations. We had one night where we heard like a table lift up and drop onto the floor. So there's, you know, there's a lot that goes on there. It's a very cool place.
All right. Let's see. Trying to think where I want to run this thing yet. I'll tell you what. Howard, why don't you go ahead and throw out there, we've got about 13 minutes left on live program, then it can go in archive where you continue this conversation for another hour, I believe.
Okay.
Go ahead and throw out any plugs for your team, upcoming locations, things like that.
Okay. It's not really the. I mean, I'm gonna plug Steve a little bit here. coming this Thursday and Friday at Enricus, of course. Me and Ryan are gonna be taking the junior investigators out there, and getting them some time out there to learn from their daddies. As far as what's coming down, you know, right now we're kind of going into our dead period. There are two things that are coming up. There's another private historic location, quote unquote, if you will, that's in the Brook Road area. That's still in negotiations, though, but we are excited to even be talking to the proprietors of the location. It's the location where Gabriel's insurrection took place. We're also going to be teaming up with a place called Haunted Hill in Ladysmith. In November, December, and me and Ryan are going to get with them, and we're going to help them, you know, get a lecture together.
All right. So you and Steve are teaming up, or you're just going to go to Enricus and hang out?
Steve, go for it. What we got Thursday and Friday night?
Thursday and Friday is something called Things That Go Bump in the Night at Enricus. It's actually a Enricus program. I want to say it's like $7, $8. And you get a candlelit tour throughout the fort. And there's going to be staff on site that are going to be dressed in period time. for, you know, around 1622, and they'll be telling, like, ghost stories, you know, myths and legends and all that sort of stuff of what happened at that time and why, you know, those people, what they would have been scared of. At the very end of the tour, Transcend Paranormal's going to be there, and we're going to have our equipment, and we're going to be showcasing some of our gear and EVPs and evidence that we've got or received out of Henrique.
That sounds like a good time. I think I'll have to see if I can get a representative from Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers to join you all.
Yeah, it would be pretty fun. And there's cookies, too. So we got a lot of cookies.
As the FNG to this little circle, do I have to bring the beer cooler, or does somebody else get that?
BYB!
Wait, isn't the prospect supposed to bring that?
Whatever they tell me to do. But I will say this about Henricus, and this goes pretty much for anybody that might be listening that's familiar with the area. I mean, just the general area around Henrico and Hanover itself is just so, you know, so steeped in history, you know. And of course, we don't have the history say that of Great Britain or England or anything like that. But I mean, you know, the areas around here go back into, you know, colonial times, as old as America can get. And any time you go to anywhere like that, I don't think, Steve can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody would care if you brought a voice recorder, and it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to just have it running while you're walking around the park and just see what you capture. It's just one of those places that that you could catch an EVP not even trying.
Definitely.
That was going to be one of my questions, was could I bring my I've got a couple of different recorders that I carry. Speaking of recorders, let me take a look at the board here and see how long we have. We have 8.5 minutes, so I'm going to hit on equipment real quick. What do you think, and I'm going to aim this one at Howard, and then I'm coming after, I got Howard on plugs. Let's hit Steve on plugs. Steve, what does Transcend having up?
We plugged last time. I just want to say one thing. At the Exchange Hotel, Howard, you might know more on this. They do have the Trail of Terror and Depot of Death. In October, it's going on starting at 8 p.m. and ending at midnight. And they do have self-guided candlelit tours every Friday and Saturday from 7 to 9 in the Exchange Hotel itself. It's in Gordonsville. We were there last year, and we helped out, scaring the crap out of people, and it's a blast. And you get to see the hotel, the depot, and all the property.
And to follow up with Steve, you can go to YouTube, look up the Exchange Hotel Trail of Death, and you'll see where I did a YouTube promo for Angel and Jamie for them out there as well.
And for those that aren't familiar, Gordonsville is right off 15, just east of Charlottesville. The Exchange Hotel is a pre-Civil War hotel turned into a receiving hospital, so it got both Northern and Southern. It had just massive casualties associated with it. They estimate, and this is the best they can do is estimate, 5,000 were buried around the, I think at that time there was 12 acres of land associated with the Exchange Hotel.
That's correct.
Now, Howard, have you ever spoken, Steve, if both of you go up there often, have either one of you ever spoken with Chief Clay and asked him about some of the freakiest shit that he's ever seen at that location?
Oh, yeah. I've actually come quite close with the whole crew up there. Well, down there, however you want to look at it. We've gotten to the point where we have found Jefferson's Tunnel, talked about some of the train issues, some of the locations, what actually takes place at the Exchange. You know, we've had a lot of conversations with Dad.
Jim?
Yeah.
Jim? No, was it
Jim? Was Poppycock. I forgot his freaking name, man.
Brain fart.
Yeah, we're both having a brain fart about some of them, but it's extraordinary. If anybody gets a chance to go there and they're offering the ability to do your ghost hunt, quote unquote. I hate that word, but you know, you get a chance to do that. Thank you, Steve. Yes, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
Not a problem.
Well, I had a brain fart.
I've been up all night trying to figure that name out.
No, then we were both going, what the fuck? Chris knows a lot. He's awesome. Clay is just the bomb. He's the chief, the sheriff up there. Clay just knows so much about that area. Angel knows a lot. Jessica Hargrove. Crossgrove.
Right.
Yeah. All of them are just, and it's not just that. It's that they're very sweet people. They're genuine. There's no BSing about them. They're just sweet people that like to have a good time and, you know, show you what's there and what they brought up. Yeah, just
they're
awesome.
Very knowledgeable people there, for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. They're, you know, I went up once before with the team that I was with prior to forming my own team. And I got a chance to speak with Chief Clay. And, man, some of the stories that he gave me were just mind-boggling. Now, keep in mind, this is a law enforcement officer that had an apparition
yeah.
He said he was nearly face-to-face with that ran right through him and another officer. So, yeah, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. That's definitely a good plug, Steve. Thank you very much for throwing that one out there. I usually do plug the Exchange Hotel.
Not a problem.
Now, we have 3.5 minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and get us into equipment. We'll get started on it with my guests that are online. Please stay online with me. Don't hang up. Because even after the live broadcast stops, we can continue. And thanks again, Ross, for joining us. But, yeah, and any of those that listen in on the archives will still be able to listen to, you know, the rest of our conversation regarding equipment. As far as Pocahontas, Ross, Pocahontas State Park is pretty large, but I have been through it just on day trips, strolling through the woods, basically.
It's funny that Pocahontas up.
Yeah. But as far as going down there and doing investigation or anything, no, I haven't. It closes at dusk. Otherwise, you
yep.
get in trouble. John, I'll answer your question. If you follow the link to Blog Talk Radio, you'll look at the top of the screen. You'll see the little picture scrolling, go to the very bottom of that screen. It'll give you a link into the chat. However, stay on the phone if you want to continue to hear.
Sure.
Thanks again, Ross. All right, now let's move on to the equipment. We have a minute and 52 of the clock. So I'm going to throw out my plugs real quick. Ladies and gentlemen, catch this on Wednesday night for Full Spectrum Radio at the same place, same time. CPR Matt and myself, CPR Dennis. We never know who the hell we're going to have on. You can catch both of us at CPR Matt, CPR Dennis at Facebook and Twitter. You can also catch Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook and at .com. Now, 60 seconds. The equipment. Obviously, the number one piece of equipment that you prefer to have on a investigation with you, Steve, is what?
Are you asking me what my favorite piece of equipment to have?
Yeah.
Common sense.
What was it?
Common sense. I think that's completely overrated.
This
or underrated,
true.
I should say.
This is definitely true. And Howard, what's the number one piece of equipment you prefer to have on any and every investigation with you?
I would say it's the piece of equipment that I developed about 3 years ago. It's my baby. It's called MOSES. It stands for Mobile Operations Surveillance Equipment System. What it does is it has an EVP parabolic dish hooked to it, has three sets of different lights. Then you have the IR light at the top of the camera. The system also has a barometric pressure sensor and has a temperature sensor. So you can pretty much walk away from it and it'll do everything for you. That's my baby. I've been cradling that for a while. And, you know, Tommy McNeil, my hand up in the air, the man brought my imagination to life, and I'm so pleased with the results.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty neat piece of equipment. I would have to say that personally, my favorite piece of equipment to have on any and every investigation with me is my body. No matter what is going on, my body will react faster than any piece of equipment. You know, you get that hair on the back of your neck stands up, you get the chills up your arm, you know, the static, the smell, pretty much anything else. Those are all the things that I look for the most. Other than that, I would have to say a good audio recorder.
Yeah.
Now, I've got the H2, I've got the H4, and then I have just this older, cheap Sony. Believe it or not, I think I've caught more on the older, cheap Sony because it is old enough that it doesn't have the sophisticated noise elimination on it. So that's my preferred pieces of equipment. What's your opinion of DVR system? And either one of you can jump in. Have either one of you ever actually got anything with the DVR system running?
RP has. Go ahead, if you want to start, however you can.
Oh, it was actually me, Steve.
Oh, go ahead.
And I've got a DVR system that I purchased and we use. And no, but I mean, you have to look at stuff like that from a different aspect. The DVR kind of, to me, in my mind, it plays two different roles. It plays, you know, it's 99% validation and 1% that you're going to catch that drop dead evidence. But at least you've got video evidence, video proof that, you know, if you hear footsteps, was there somebody walking down the hall? You know, if you think a team member said something, the video can tell you yes or no. So I think just having that additional video footage of the investigations themselves will either prove or discredit a lot of things that people may or may not believe are actual evidence.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
And that's basically what I was going to, you know, say. You know, it's an awesome piece of equipment to have to say, hey, look, you know, nobody was talking. We weren't moving at that time.
Yeah. Now, I was having, well, actually, Matt and I were both having this conversation with Wanda Kay. She's the one that does the ghost hunts at Bobby Mackey's. There's a couple of houses nearby Bobby Mackey's that she does investigations at also. And she brought up a good point that, you know, has been around for a while, but she actually brought it back to the forefront of my mind. What do you think the heavy IR floods? I mean, there's some speculation that they're irritating or perhaps even painful to spirit.
I've often thought that anyway.
Yeah, I felt the same way, Dennis. I
we just don't have the confirmation if it's working properly or not. And, you know, it'd be nice to get, you know, I hate to say it like this, but to get an EVP to confirm, hey, this is starting, you know, this sucks. Turn that damn thing off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd like to get confirmation.
Yeah, that would, you know, that would certainly be a great piece of confirmation. And, you know, perhaps in your questioning, you know, we all ask the same questions. You know, are you here with us? Can you make a noise? One of the things that I've started doing, I mean, the whole reason that I got into this was to find out what's on the other side. So my line of questioning is more along that line.
Right.
And it's into, you know, can you see the lights from my equipment? Can you see the red light on this? Can you see the green light on that? You know, I want to know if they see colors. Can you feel color, I mean, feel temperature variables? You know, so those are more along the lines of the questioning that I do during EVP sessions. You know, of course, there's, you know, can you tell me your name and, you know, things like that, you know, to get some validation as to what energies are there. But, you know, I also want to know what their perspective is on our gear. You know, are we approaching this in the right way, or are we just, you know, beating our meat, so to speak, running in circles, not accomplishing anything because they don't acknowledge our equipment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, obviously,
obviously,
to an extent, our equipment does its job simply because, you know, we do catch EVPs. You know, we have evidence of shadow figures on camera and things like that. But the question is, you know, how can we get spirit to work with us to prove their existence better? And that's one of the things that I'm after.
I think it's kind of you have to kind of approach that from the location itself. I mean, are you dealing with somebody that departed recently? You know, when, you know, after the light bulb that actually knows what a flashlight is, or you're dealing with something that's a lot older, where you know, back in their time you'd have been hung for being a witch if you turned a flashlight on. So, I mean, is it scary to them? You kind of have to think of it like that. Now, I have actually captured an EVP at a battlefield here locally, where we had asked to change lights on a K2, and if it could make the lights light up, and we got an EVP responding to us saying they are pretty, and we would assume that they were referring to lights on the K2 that were going off at that time. Were they referring to that, or were they referring to me? I don't know. I thought they were referring to me, but my wife seems to think that they were talking about the lights on the K2. But I think from the aspect of what, you know, sometimes it's better to just go under a place. You know, simpler times called for, you know, simpler approaches. You know, spirits at a historic location that were, you know, pre-Civil War, Civil War. They didn't have a lot of the equipment. So if they can see light and they walk into a room and they see 15 K2s laying out on the floor in 6 millimeters, you know, I would, you know, if I was a Civil War soldier, I'd turn around and leave immediately. So.
Valid point. Now, I will say this. One of the things that Matt says, he absolutely loves to keep his little bag of tricks, so to speak. There's a small bag of flour and rosin paper. You know, footsteps here and there are reported, you know, repeatedly and consistently. Put a little bit of rosin paper down and sprinkle it with flour. So, you know, you don't have to have the, you know, $400 H4N recorder and, you know, just a little $40 Sony handy recorder is all I use most of the time. I'll set my other ones up, you know, the H4 and the H2, I'll set them up because they've got the large memory chips in them. And I just leave them run. And, I mean, they do work, don't get me wrong. I've got some incredible evidence off of them. But, you know, I think I've gotten just as much off that little cheap $40 recorder. But, yeah, it is a valid point that if you're playing in a pre-Civil War location, do they even know what the hell you mean when you say, can you turn on that flashlight?
Hey, Dennis, this is something we've changed up. You go into a location that you've been in before, you knew you got some evidence or you have some activity. You do a little bit more research. Ryan started to change his speech pattern, actually, to speak more on the terms of the data that was used. We actually use that exchange, too. You go into exchange, these people don't know what a camera is. You know, they may not have a clue what your spirit box is. So when you go in there, you're going to use the definitions of the period of time, like they would see us as artists back then. That's what we were called. So using dialect of the period seems to be actually working to our benefit. So that's another piece.
Yeah, if I talk to a little kid or a little girl, I try to soften my tone a little bit, like I was talking to a kid right in front of me. So they won't be scared to talk.
So you'll bring out your feminine side to speak with the little children?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I've had, you know, of course we've all done the, you know, sit on the floor routine, so you're more at their level instead of this looming, towering thing above them. But, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. You know, and changing your wording around a little bit to try to fit the period. So
you don't want to be intimidating.
Say again?
I say you don't want to be intimidating if you're talking to a child. You want to talk to her like you're talking to a kid in real life.
Right. Well, I don't know. I hate curtain climbers, so I talk to all them little shits the same. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. But, yeah, I mean, now, that's, you know, it's such a wide open field. There really is no way to know exactly how to go about any particular location. You know, no matter what we do, no matter how much we try to say that we're scientific about what we do, pretty much all we're doing is, when they're chasing our tail and trying for the best and see what the hell comes out of it and hope that we get something magnificent as an outcome. But, all right, well, I'm going to go ahead and draw this one to a close. It's 11:15. If you have any points that you want to bring out, by all means, any particular topic you want to approach, or if any magnificent evidence that you wanted to talk about or a location that just, you know, really, you know, made your panties wad up, by all means, feel free to throw it out there.
Hey.
Well, you know, that's the one thing around the Richmond Tri-City area. There's so much around here, and a lot of it hasn't even been tapped yet. And that's one of the reasons, you know, Steve knows. There's just places I'm just refusing to go now. They're going to charge me to go in there when another group's already been through, and like four or five, six other groups have been through, with the exception of Exchange. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not going. Me and the group don't want to go to another place that 12, 13 other groups have been through, and we're just going to get the same stuff. I mean, what's the purpose? That we were trying to find and tapping new resources. Maybe we can get different evidence, different responses.
Yeah, well, that also comes down to your approach to the location.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. I've been out here long enough that I know there's a lot of teams that are pretty much just mouth breathers. And, you know, they wouldn't know an apparition if it walked up and, you know, bitch slapped them. So, ooh, look at this orb. No, you dumbass. You're traipsing through a wheat field in the middle of July taking still pictures. They're not orbs.
So
Or the notorious so, Japanese people at night.
Rain. I think education has more to do with that than location. No matter how many other teams have been through there, if you're in your case, if you're utilizing Ryan to his fullest ability and, you know, getting as much historical background as possible, and, you know, Steve is doing his due diligence on getting his background and using his investigators that, you know, and, you know, of course, throwing John out there as ghost bait, you know, I think then you will get evidence that the other teams didn't get. But I do concur in the fact that, you know, nobody wants to go to the same location that every other team was going, and you're booking it 2 months out because, well, we've got every weekend booked.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
I just want to go and, you know, if I just want to go and keep my team practice, then, you know, that's what I have my training location for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could go to that every weekend and get something different. Unfortunately, though, what's been proven to me is every time I go there, I get called a fucker. No, laugh. I'm dead serious. I've got, you know, my location. Every time I go there, I have one room in the location that I can go into. None of my team will get anything out of this location. You let me go in that same exact room for 5 minutes, and I get called a fucker. And it doesn't sound like a pleasant individual either. So, but
you,
yeah, I've told you about that one. Well, I've told both of you, and I will make it a point that we will get together, and we'll go check out that location. And we'll see if he wants to call either one of you a fucker instead of just me.
Hey, bring it on. We should get every
And Steve, you have to promise me that you'll bring the investigator in training along and we use him for ghost bait.
Sure. How's that?
That's fine. I've been called a fucker by plenty of times, but never by a spirit, so we'll see what happens.
This one actually, no joke, I got the EVP that I captured was choked that fucker. And I felt pressure on my throat and started into a coughing fit. I've never been scratched. I've never been hit. You know, never had my shirt tugged on or my pant leg pulled on or anything like that. But I can say that I did get choked. It was definitely interesting.
So, and see, I don't know, but for whatever reason, those are the places I want to go. I mean, we were at St. Albans one time, and there was this one specific area. They said, don't go in there. That's where people get scratched. And I'm like, well, move out of my way. I'm going in there, and that's where I sat. So I can honestly say that's not something I'm scared of. Now, that's not to say that when it happens that I won't crap my pants and run out of the room, but that to me would just be, you know, I would want to experience that. So I'm not scared to go into an area, you know, that's deemed hostile or into an area where I, you know, there's a dark feeling or a strange feeling or an isolation session or something like that. That's one of the aspects I like of it.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
Yeah. And that was John speaking, correct?
Yes.
All right. Now, have you watched the series that it was only on briefly? I'm guessing they were doing just kind of testing the waters, but it was called Ghost Bait.
No, I've never. It must have been on very briefly.
Yep.
Yeah.
I
have to say it was a dumbass idea. I don't know what sci-fi was thinking with it.
Sci-fi.
Yeah. But what they would do, they would have a location where the family's having experiences and so forth. They would take the most frightened individual in the family, put a burlap bag over their head, and put them in that room to, quote-unquote, face their fears. Well, I don't know about you, but if my fear is a demon, I don't want a burlap bag over my head when I'm trying to figure out where to run, because I'm going to make that son of a bitch look like a scene right out of Scooby-Doo and the Adventure Team. And I'm putting a hole through the wall.
And to me that's a little different. I mean, I think if you're doing isolation sessions, that the one thing that you want to have is somebody, you know, close by. Some type of a camera set up to where, you know, a DVR or something where somebody can keep an eye on you. And that you have the ability at any point that you get uncomfortable or feel like you have to leave, then you can leave. And you certainly can't do that with a burlap sack tied around your head.
Exactly.
You know, and that's just this very unsafe situation that you're putting that individual in to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, they kept them on camera view. You know, they have the night vision set up and everything, running off DVR. But I don't understand the premise when you don't know what is there and what it's capable of.
I don't know.
To just abandon somebody in that area.
Yeah.
That puts them in that much danger. It's so much.
I think it might be, that kind of stuff might be fake, because you're not going to put someone in that much danger. They could sue the station if they get hurt. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem like a very smart idea at all.
Yeah, and that's.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, somebody can validate this point. Kind of, I'm just under the impression that, you know, the energy that you're putting off in an investigation is the energy that's going to, you're going to attract. So I'm of one the belief that if you're just in a pissed off, angry mood for whatever reason, just you feel, you know, uncomfortable. Not uncomfortable. I would just say you had a bad day at work, and you go in there and you're thinking about demons or whatever, that you might get what you ask for.
Yeah.
No,
I
disagree because, you know, the night that I got choked, I had, you know, no animosity towards anything. I was actually in a really good mood. I'm hanging out with great people. We were having a blast out in the parking lot prior to, you know, cracking jokes and having a good time. And then I go into that room and I get, you know, an EVP of choke that much. No, it certainly wasn't the energy I was putting out.
Yeah, I'm not saying all the time. I'm just saying if they put you into that heightened sense of awareness where they're putting a bag over your head and putting you into a location to face your fears, that you're more susceptible to believe that what you're encountering or is your fear, or that you could attract that more so than if you were, you know, bouncing in the room off of a happy high. But I'm not saying if you're in a good mood and you go into a room that's got a negative energy, it's not going to choke the crap out of you. I'm just saying that if you don't know what to expect and you're in there to face your fears and you're thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get attacked by a demon, then, you know, even if somebody comes up and pokes you in the back of your head as a joke, you're going to feel like that you've just been attacked by a demon.
I see what you're getting at with that one. I kind of go along with that. The mindset of what you anticipate plays a lot into what you perceive.
Exactly.
Basically parapsychology, which is, you know, the idea of implanting or, you know, what you experience is more so what you are, you know, what you are experiencing internally. Than actually external factors, you know, that there is something there. It's more so that, you know, it's what you're making up it to be.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll definitely have to let you listen to the, and, you know, we'll have to sit down, all of us together. We'll have a you know, hops beverage or three, and we'll go over some of the shit that we've all gotten and see what each other thinks, and, you know, just have a good time on a round table. How's that sound, gentlemen?
I think it's great.
That sounds great. But, all right. Well, on that note, I'm going to go ahead and want to draw this one to a close. Howard, if you would, go right ahead and throw your plugs out there for your team, All Seeing Paranormal.
All right. You can find us on Facebook at All Seeing Paranormal. You can reach me as well at Howard Odell. Facebook.com. You can also find us at Wix at allseeingparanormal.com. The Wix site is just a basic information site, so we get ourselves up 100% running. But the Facebook is pretty much taken care of on a daily basis. I pretty much keep on it, check on messages, and upload as much as I can.
All right. Thank you, sir. And Steve, your turn, sir.
We're at transcendparanormal.com. We've got contact, you know, email, phone, whatever, if you ever need us for anything. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/transcendparanormal.
All right. And also, if any of you didn't understand something that they had to say or something that, you know, one of their plugs on how to contact them, you can always feel free to contact me at CPR Dennis at Facebook or Twitter. Join us on Wednesday nights for Full Spectrum Radio. We'll be back at the same channels. We're trying to get, and I'm going to throw a little shameless plug out and hope this works, otherwise I'll look like a dumbass. We're trying to get Jason Musgrove to join us. You never know, though. Hell, it could be anybody. And it could be nobody. But look for us Wednesday night on Full Spectrum. Thanks for joining us tonight, folks. Matt, I'm glad you had a good time in Chicago at the Q&A session for Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. And on that note, gentlemen, I am going to play us out. I think I'm going to play a little bit of, let's see, what do I want? Find my way here. I'm so confused. Where are my things at? Well, let's do this first.
Getting nightmares? Then you're not listening to Full Spectrum Radio. The best radio on the planet.
Oh, you.
again, ladies and gentlemen, Full Spectrum Unleashed, signing off.